Welcome back, everyone, to the Risk Intel Podcast, powered by SRA Watchtower, where we share risk intelligence with experts from across the banking industry. I'm your host, Ed Vinson, CEO at SRA Watchtower. Hello, welcome back to the Risk Intel Podcast. Please join me in welcoming back Sean Ryan to the show today. Sean, thanks for being here.
Thanks again, Ed. Thanks for having me.
Sean, as I've mentioned, Wright brings 30 years of experience in financial institutions, financial services firms. And Sean, as I've mentioned in the past, right, you've worked at that, you know, that regional local community bank, but also at the very large financial institution. And I think along the way, you've witnessed and maybe been close to some hidden factories yourself. So that's the theme of today's conversation. We talked in our last episode about what is a hidden factory? What are the characteristics? And right, when we talked about things like inefficiencies and technology gaps, communication breakdowns, undetected issues, and kind of cultural and strategic alignment. Today, I'd like to go kind of one level deeper and take that question of what is a hidden factory, and ask, what does a hidden factory look like inside a bank? Right, you've lived in a few of these instances. What have you seen? Can you give us a couple of examples of what a hidden factory looks like inside a financial institution?
Yeah, as I said in the first podcast that we recorded together, Ed, right? I think one of the best examples of a hidden factory in corporate America today is the use of spreadsheets to compile, analyze, produce information that later gets fed. So, you know, all of the underlying individual use spreadsheets that support the official process or the official model. And I can think of, I have three examples that I think we could talk a little bit about, or at least I'll just share with you, and you know, you can poke some questions at me. When I first started in financial analysis at Thrift in upstate New York, Rochester Community Savings Bank, I was tasked with building a cost accounting program for the banks to try to figure out, you know, we were going to try to determine branch profitability, product profitability, and customer profitability. And not surprising, we started, and this was Lotus 1-2-3. So not even Excel, right? This is a couple days back. Maybe a few of you will remember Lotus. So, you know, what we do is we started building this model in a spreadsheet. And what you find very quickly is there's severe limitations to a spreadsheet, both its dimensionality and then its stability as revisions are made or as information is distributed out within the organization and then collected back, right? There's just a lot of challenges there. People even unknowingly might change the formatting or might change the structure of the spreadsheet that they're working on. And then when you try to import that into the official model or something like that, you spend a lot of time trying to get it to fit, right? It's, oh, the fields aren't correct or you haven't saved the number as a number, you've saved it as, right? There's just all kinds of problems that exist when you use, you know, a spreadsheet to compile information like that. The other one that I think every one of us probably gets, right? I'm the CFO of SRA. I've been in financial analysis in a lot of different roles. And every year, everybody's asked to put together a budget. And oftentimes there's an official budget model, and maybe even the finance function distributes some input models or some input sheets to the organization to put in their inputs before they load it into the official model. Well, you certainly know that there's two or three departments that don't want to do it that way, right? That say, I know what I'm going to do. I've got my own model that I use to manage my departmental expenses or my departmental revenues on a regular basis. And I want you to use that model to feed into the official model. Well, all those same problems that I just described exist, right? Their model is not structured the same way. It may not have the same, you know, thinking of budgets may not have the same account setup. It might have the old GL information in it instead of the new GL information, right? So once you take something outside of a standard piece of technology and you start working on it outside of that standard piece of technology, you increase the likelihood for error, the risk that you think about what the recipient now is doing with that, right? They are, instead of seeing, is this a good budget? they're spending their time trying to figure out, can I load this information into my budget model? They're not checking the validity and sanctity of the information. They're simply trying to get it someplace, as opposed to looking at whether it works or not. Imagine that all you wanted to do is make sure that the thing that they put in your driveway looked like a car, rather than it actually being able to take you to the grocery store and get food for your family and get it back. No, it looks like a car, but when I jump in it, it's just got a lawn chair inside it and no controls. So those are just, I have one more example that's actually not from my banking days that I thought was kind of telling and particularly relevant to what we do at SRA. At S&P Global, where I worked for many years, we would do, and this is not to disparage the risk managers at S&P Global, please. We did risk control self-assessments, right? And we were mailed. I was the, because I had a background in risk, I was responsible for the risk control self-assessment for the marketing organization, which is what I was a part of then. And I would get mailed a spreadsheet every year, and I had to fill it out, right? And it might have multiple tabs based on various risk attributes. Maybe if I'm not a risk person, I don't even know what that means, right? I don't even understand that. And then if there were changes between the organization that I was part of this year and last year, my choices were go through a lot of personal effort to update that spreadsheet to reflect the current organizational structure of the marketing department, or just try to make my answers fit in the boxes that they gave me last year, right? And so when I do that, now I'm giving them something back that doesn't conform to the way they expected to receive that information, an error, risk, delay, overprocessing, right? All of the Six Sigma stuff, right? That we're pretty familiar with in modern corporate parlance. You know, there's defects, there's overproduction, there's errors, there's waiting because I'm trying to figure out how to make it work. You know, there's just a lot of error that can, and problems and risk that can creep into a system that relies on a hidden factory to produce its results.
It's interesting, right? When you go through, whether it's you know, that last example or the former one when you talked about that budgeting process, you think about the amount of effort that the finance team puts into the budgeting process, but you don't talk about, we don't think about all the effort that goes into that input work. Right. So that, to your point about, I think in our first conversation, we talked about things that were, you know, out of sight, right, or outside the known activities. It's the work that goes in behind the scenes that you don't quantify, we don't think about, that really truly impacts the cost of getting that activity of budgeting done. Mm-hmm. Look, you could replace budgeting with loan review or underwriting, right? You could put any of those processes in there, and you know, it's the hallway conversations. It is the sharing something back and forth over email to get someone else's perspective on it, as opposed to going to a central location where something might be stored and having a formal sign off or a formal review documented in the process that you can quantify that this takes another person 30 minutes of their time, and then you can factor that into the total cost of underwriting a given loan. So, you know, I think it's the items that there are beyond the line of sight, if you will, that don't get quantified, that are truly hidden, that can have massive costs, if you will, inside of an organization.
Yeah, you mentioned, it's funny, another example just came to mind. You mentioned in our previous episode, my tenure at Capital One, where I was in the risk operations function, I was responsible for producing, loss forecasts, recoveries forecasts, fraud forecasts for the organization, in addition to doing the budgeting, you know, for those departments. And we were asked at one point in time to figure out how we could turn around the provision and the allowance calculations in a shorter time period. We wanted to close our books faster. And, you know, this might fast forward to some of our later episodes in this series, but what we started with in order to do that is we all got in a room, all of the people responsible for the various components of that forecast, we all got in a room and we just outlined the process. And we realized just what you said, how many pieces like nobody even knew about. Well, no, well, I'm always waiting for this to come from this department and look over at that department and, well, what does it take to produce that piece? And nobody knew, right? Only the person who was responsible for that had any knowledge of what it was taking to get that done. Now, if it had been part of a single piece of technology, or we had made the effort to link that factory and to make it not so hidden as it was, right? And we wouldn't have one had such a piece of work to do to make it to make it more efficient, make it faster, get it done quicker. But we probably wouldn't even had to get together and talk about it. We would have just been able to see it, right? It would have been visible to us. These are the links in the chain. And you know, it's very important in risk management to be able to see all the links in the chain. Again, back to this idea of what you're spending your time on. The hidden factory stops you from spending your time on whether the output is actionable, right? And what we want in risk management, or what we want in a budget or a financial forecast or a loss forecast or a cost accounting system, is we want outputs that are actionable. If you're spending all your time making sure that there's no error or risk or redundancy or delay or inconsistency in your process, you're not spending any time thinking about the output.
I was talking to a head of enterprise risk management earlier today, and that was exactly their point, which was, the individual is talking about the amount of effort they put into consolidating information at the top of the house. They spend all of their time pulling that information together by hand, and therefore they don't have the time to evaluate it and analyze it and compare it to prior materials and really think about, you know, the trends and make observations. The other aspect to that is, and you know, from you kind of introduced this risk concept here, that undetected risks exist all over the place in a hidden factory. And so as the chief risk officer, right, if you don't have awareness of what these hidden factories are or that they exist, then you can't ask the probing questions. You can't truly assess the organization's exposure, and you can't anticipate the what ifs, right? I mean, it's the role of that risk department is to think about those what ifs and shine a light on them so the organization can make a decision about whether they're acceptable or not, or whether an action needs to be taken. If you're not aware that those things are even going on, how can you even ask the what if questions? Are you aware that this process is occurring on the back of a napkin? That it is, you know, one individual where there's a single point of failure, right? What if that individual is, you know, you proverbially hit by a bus, right? Or if they're out of the office, right? Can you, you know, are you able to risk accept that or make a decision to mitigate it if you're not even aware that it's going on?
Yeah, the opportunity for risks to go undetected or under discovered, or frankly under discussed, is probably the most important, right? All those other things, risk officers, bank executives, they tend to have a decent idea of the risks, but it's, are we spending all our time aggregating the information, which can be cumbersome and fraught with error, or are we spending our time reviewing aggregated information in such a way that we can make decisions and decide how to change the outcome or accept the outcome that we get from the information provided. And to me, that's all the difference, right? I think that, you know, in our domain, sound risk management is about taking on the acceptable amount of risk to achieve the outcome that you want to achieve. Hidden factories stand in the way of you being able to do that well. It's really that simple.
I think that's very, very well articulated. Sean, thank you for sharing those examples.
Sure.
I think it's great. It turns it again from the academic or the theoretical into the actual for those in a financial institution. Let's come back together next time. We'll talk about in a bit more detail the risks associated with these hidden factories. We started to touch on it there at the end.
Yeah.
And then how does an organization uncover these hidden factories? And what do you do about them when you find them? So certainly more to cover in the future, but thank you for sharing your perspectives here today.
Thanks again, Ed. Pleasure to be here.
For more information on SRA, please visit srarisk.com. Watch or listen to our weekly Risk Intel podcast series, or follow us on LinkedIn to learn more.